Hey, it's Melissa. You know, a little help goes a long way when you're rebuilding your life after the death of your spouse. That's why we've put together some amazing free resources just for you. They're packed with guidance and the answers you've been looking for. So let's begin this journey of renewal together. Head over to widowsquad.com, click on freebies, and unlock these powerful tools. Your journey to a brighter future begins here. Now let's get back to the show.
You are listening to the Widow Squad podcast, the show that helps widows create a fulfilling life after loss. Join hosts Kim Murray and Melissa Pierce as they share expert tips, resources, and advice to help you get a grip on your grief and learn how to thrive. If you're a widow, this is where you want to be.
Welcome to the Widow Squad podcast. I'm your host, Kim Murray, and I'm talking to Tracy Quinn today about her widowhood experience as a COVID widow. Tracy is also a member of our Widow Squad community, and I've known her to be very gracious in sharing her ups and downs and everything in between in our membership meetings. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to hear from Tracy directly as we chat about the hurdles she's jumped, the most important things she's learned along the way, and how she's found those little bits of happiness and hope, even when things seem super tough. So whether you're walking a similar path or just here to listen and learn, I think you'll find Tracy's story really helpful and heartwarming. So thank you, Tracy. Can you tell us a little bit about your background story and how you became widowed?
So Carl and I were married for 36 years and had our anniversary Thanksgiving of 2019. And then, of course, 2020 hits and it's the pandemic. And we went off to a conference in Colorado and late February, early March, and came home and Carl had caught COVID. 25 out of 35 of the attendees actually ended up catching it.
Oh, wow.
And it was so early on that, you know, people didn't know other than stay home, you know, you're sick. He was still working from home because his company had gone, you know, work from home. And shutdown happened March 17th. And so, you know, we're kind of just rocking and rolling and doing what everybody's doing and trying to find toilet paper and all the normal stuff.
Yes, I remember the toilet paper fiasco. Yeah. That's so crazy when you think back on that.
He was pretty sick, for sure, and not, you know, like firing on all cylinders as far as his brain goes, but and coughing and the, you know, normal stuff. And he finally was able to get tested on a Friday because you couldn't even get tested. It was so early. And it came back positive. And then he was actually feeling better by Monday. So that was Friday. By Monday, he was feeling better. And we had a great day together, you know, cooked dinner together, enjoyed a lovely evening. And then 3:30 in the morning, he got up to go to the bathroom, came back to bed. And I said, "Are you okay?" You know, like I normally would, because he had been sick. And he goes, "Yeah, but I did something to my back." And he had thrown out his back in the past, right? So I was like, okay, all right. And he got back into bed and I turn over and I'm starting to go back to sleep and I hear him sit back up and I thought, oh yeah, he's not comfortable. His back is really hurting. And then I heard this slam and it turned out it was his head hitting the nightstand. And his arm was hanging between the bed and the nightstand. And I was like, you know, Carl. And
so he sat up.
He
sat up, or you saw him sit up.
I heard him sit up.
You heard him sit up. Okay. So you're thinking he's okay. You just hear him sit up. And then
he's okay. He's just can't get comfortable because he, you know, threw out his back coughing or whatever. Turns out he probably, well, either through a blood clot or some sort of heart event happened due to the COVID. And, you know, I checked and he still had a pulse. I grabbed my phone, call 911 right away. And they were amazing on the phone, but I had to get him flat. Mm-hmm. So like lift him onto the floor to be able to do CPR until the firemen could get here, the paramedics, which was about 5 minutes. But the woman on the phone was just amazing and helping me count breaths and,
right.
And, but he's not responsive. So the firemen come in and, you know, they're doing their stuff and the fire captain pulls me aside and is asking me some questions and what's going on. And yes, he tested positive for COVID. And then there, funny thing, he stops me and he goes, "Ma'am, maybe you want to put some pants on."
Oh my gosh, like, you don't even know it at this point?
I'm in a t-shirt and my underwear, but you know, no pajama
pants. Of course you are.
Pants.
You were in bed. Like, right?
And I'm all, yeah, be right back, right?
So I go
to get dressed and then I can hear, you know, the clear and the shock in him.
Oh my gosh.
And so he pulls me aside down the hallway a little ways and he's asking me more questions and stuff. And two more times I hear them, you know, try to shock him. And so then the fire captain says, why don't we go sit out in your front room? I'm like, okay, all right. And then I come out here and one of the younger paramedics is out here with me. And I walked over to my front door to get my shoes and put my shoes on because I'm thinking, yeah, we're going to the hospital.
You're going to the hospital, right.
I better get my shoes on. And I came and I sat on the couch and I stopped and I went, oh, I'm not going to be able to go to the hospital, am I? They're not allowing people in. And he goes, no, I'm sorry. No, you won't. And I'm like, okay, so set my shoes aside, right? I don't know. Half an hour maybe goes by. The sheriff's department shows up and they walk in about 5 steps, look around and see all of us wearing masks. Mm-hmm. And then he stops and goes, oh, it's a COVID house. And he turns and leaves. And then they refuse to come in. The entire
sheriff's
rest
department
of the day.
Wouldn't come in?
Sheriff's department wouldn't come in. So then it was like 4:50 in the morning, 4:40 something. 4:48 is when they called it. And they came out and they said, you know, I'm sorry, we did everything we could. He didn't make it. Is there somebody we can call? And I'm like, Who do we call? Nobody can come in.
Right. Who are they thinking you're going to call at that point?
Yeah. Well, and I had a phone call with the county health department. When Carl's test came back positive, they made me have an appointment online and said, we're going to assume you either had it or you have it. Or you're going to have it. Mm-hmm. And so you need to restart, you know, you're finishing up your 14 days of quarantine.
Oh,
but you know, don't leave, don't go out, don't see anybody. Okay. And so I tried to call my sister, but you know, it's not even 5 a.m. here.
Right. And everything, and so, but you're still we know looking back, you don't know it at the time, but you know, looking back, like you're in shock. What are you supposed to do?
In shock.
Who do you call? What do you say? They came out and told you your husband died. He was okay 20 minutes ago. And now he's dead.
And not like, okay now. Now he's dead and gone. Yeah.
You can't
and
process
I was thinking
that information.
We were going to the hospital and then, oh. No, we're not. I did get a hold of my brother because he gets up early to go to work. And he's like just in shock, like, no. And I said, I got to go. I got to call my kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Call my kids. Tell them.
So your kids are how old at this point? How old are your kids? When that happened, they were
29.
So they were adults.
29 and 27 or 28 and 30.
Okay.
I'm terrible at that birthday homework. But yes,
they were adults.
And don't live home and haven't, you know, for many years.
Now, they knew their dad was
my
sick.
Daughter,
they knew he had COVID,
absolutely. Yes. But they also knew he had had a great day and was feeling better. And his, you know, oxygen numbers were actually pretty good because we had just gotten in the mail one of those, like, breathe in and it measured your oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like good. So we thought we're on the upswing. And so, yes. And so my daughter said, well, Mom, whatever you've been doing, you got to continue to do. You got to eat. You got to sleep. Mm-hmm. You got to take care of yourself because we can't lose you too. And I'm like,
right.
Okay.
Right.
Right. So then the sheriff's department came to the door. The firemen are cleaning up and getting ready to leave. And the sheriff comes to the door and says, so I have some bad information, bad news. And he said, the county coroner refuses to come pick up the body because it's a COVID body.
This is unbelievable.
So you need to find some. So you need to find someone else to come get the body.
And do what? Take it where? And do what? If the coroner can't pick it up, what are you supposed to do with it?
And who?
And who? And where is it going?
Right. So I'm like, so that's what I asked. I said, who do you suggest? And they said, maybe Santa Clara County coroner or a funeral home.
Yeah,
and
the funeral home. Yeah.
I'm all, okay, fine. And sadly, but blessing in disguise, my father-in-law had just passed unexpectedly of a heart attack at the end of January. And we had just finished having his service and everything. And I was very involved in the planning of it. And so I happened to have the phone number, you know, right there handy.
Gotcha.
Called the funeral home. And they said, okay, we can send a crew out, but it'll be an hour and a half or 2 hours before we can get there. Okay. What am I supposed to do, right?
I want to ask you a question, though, about the COVID and the heart situation. So obviously your husband had COVID. Yeah. Was that what was put on the death certificate then with COVID? Or was there something else that you found out or that you knew had precipitated this or caused his actual, was it a heart attack? How did he fall over or lose breath or what was he?
So they did list COVID as the number one cause of death. And number two listed was respiratory distress.
Because of COVID or because of something else? Do you believe that he died of COVID or do you think he died because of something else?
I believe he died of COVID that affected, you know, his heart. They were just like the day that he passed and the next day is when they started coming out with it affecting people's hearts and were throwing blood clots and stuff because otherwise he was perfectly healthy. Wasn't on any medications at all, exercised, ate well.
Right.
You know, saw his doctors regularly, had, you know, all the normal tests that,
right.
You
like
know,
nothing,
that you would
nothing
do if
leading
you're
to
a
this.
Healthy person. Right? Mm-hmm. Nothing at all leading to it. So, yeah, it was crazy.
Did you get COVID or did you have COVID? Did that happen?
Well,
did you test for COVID?
Apparently I did because, I had like, congestion,
symptoms.
Sniffles for like 3 days. But I took, I don't know, one day I took a Sudafed.
Mm-hmm.
But that was seriously it.
Okay. Just curious because.
I didn't ever get tested for it.
Okay.
But I did go in and have the antibodies test.
Okay.
In June that year. Or May or June, like 2 months later, as soon as I could. And it showed that I definitely had the antibodies. Mm-hmm. So I had had it. I just didn't realize. And my case was super mild.
Which is has to be frustrating for you because of obviously this resulted in the death of your husband. So you see yourself and other people who fly through COVID and don't have an issue with it. And then other people are dying from it. And there's no rhyme or reason per se that they can really necessarily pinpoint. So that has to be incredibly frustrating. And then you're dealing with all the rest of the distancing issues that come with COVID.
Yes.
So you are now responsible to find somebody to pick up his body and coordinate things that you shouldn't have to be coordinating, that, you know, somebody else would do or the coroner would do or whatever what else would do. So your husband dies suddenly.
Yes.
Then you have all these other things you have to take care of. And then you have social distancing. And then you have people that are looking at you with a side eye because you had COVID. And it's almost like, don't want to be in the room with you or don't want to, you know, be near you.
Right.
And all of that on top of it. So at this point, I mean, did you, like, this is not a joke, but did you develop PTSD from any of this? Like this sudden death?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. I can imagine you would.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And my boyfriend now had COVID at the end of February or middle of February. And the PTSD was like every time he coughed, I was like,
okay. That has to be so scary. That has to be so scary.
It was scary. Yes.
Yeah, just a reminder, Tracy's a Widow Squad member. Yeah. And, you know, she brought that to the group because you were having a hard time getting through that.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of why you need to be around people who kind of understand what you're going through or understand what being a widow is like and how those triggers can come up, because it could be just the simplest things that could throw you into a panic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can understand how a cough or, anything, any sickness, any sniffles, anything lead you right back to that place. Like, oh my gosh, I hope he doesn't die.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also am not to over exaggerate it, but it's like, if you have a cough and you have a congestion, you should probably test and see if you have it. And I understand, you know, the tests aren't foolproof, but why not? You can still get free tests, you know, every so often from, you know, the government, and just get your test and test so that you're aware.
Just so that you know, because this isn't going away. Crazy. We understand this, right? This is not going
away. It's not going to go anywhere. No, no.
So we need to, hopefully we can manage it better than we did.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They, that morning, so then one of my brothers and another brother and his wife showed up. But by then I had had a phone call from the county already informing me that my quarantine had to restart 14 days all over again. I was not to leave the house unless I was alone and, you know, outside for a walk. That was it. And no one could enter the house for 14 days. And so my family would come and visit me out on my patio here and talk to me through the screen. But all those normal things you do, you know, bring food or come in and just be with the person, do laundry.
Supporting you.
None of that, you know. No, none of that could happen. It was crazy.
It's crazy. And we look back on it now. We've got 4 years, you know, distance, and probably could have done things differently. Not you. I'm saying the world.
Sure.
Society in general. Right. You can't go back and change that. But so you have all those added elements of the death. You know, death is hard. Mm-hmm. Whether it's sudden or whether you're expecting it. No one can prepare for the finality of death. And you've got all the things that you have to deal with after all that happens. So you're doing that in quarantine. You're doing all those things in quarantine. So I'm curious, you know, so what are one or two things maybe that you wish that people understood about the experience of losing a spouse? You lost your spouse, but you were also dealing with the the COVID quarantine part. And we were all a little crazy back then. Like, we didn't really know what was going on. And a lot of people were dying. Let's be honest. You know, a lot of people were dying.
So you
got a little bit of, you know, space between then and now. So what do you wish people knew or understood about the experience of losing your spouse?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey there, this is Kim Murray from the Widow Squad, and we've got something special in store for you. It's time to unlock a world of healing with our incredible gift just for you, the How to Have a Better Relationship with Grief Guide. Picture this: expert tips and practical strategies all bundled up in one comprehensive resource. It's like having a supportive friend by your side guiding you through the ups and downs of your healing journey. Now here's the best part. It's absolutely free. Ready to dive in? Simply visit widowsquad.com/resources and your free guide awaits. It's time to transform your relationship with grief and discover the strength within you. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to take control of your healing process. Head over to widowsquad.com/resources and grab your free guide today.
The hard part is, I think For me, the people that kind of expectation that at the 1 year mark, for whatever reason, people think you should be good. You should be good now. It's been a year. You know, move on.
Move on. We hear that a lot. Move on.
Yeah. Right. Yes. Mm-hmm. And there's just, I'm sorry. There's just no, I don't think there's any magic number or date when it's going to become less.
No.
I don't think you ever are over it.
No.
But it does become less. But yeah, I think and I love hearing that I'm so strong. You're so strong. You, right. Yes. It is, and it is. It does feel good, and I am stronger than I ever thought. But I think it would be good for people to know that we do still want to talk about, you know, our spouse, our loved
Absolutely.
One. And not avoid talking about them because we think it might hurt.
Right.
If anything, it's one for me, and I can only speak for me. It's wonderful to talk about Carl and how goofy and silly and brilliant he was. But, you know, that makes me smile. I might have tears, but
of
then
course.
I'm okay again. You know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's what I think the expectation of most people that haven't experienced a death, a significant loss, I think the expectation for them is that we don't want to talk about it. We don't want to be reminded of it. They're going to make us even more sad if they bring up our spouse's name. And we have to laugh. And we laugh about this in the Widow Squad too, because it's so funny. Like, no. It's like literally the opposite. We want to talk about them all the time. We don't not want to talk about them.
Yes.
Will we cry? Of course. Will we be sad?
Yes.
That those feelings don't go away. We just make room for them.
Right.
And so that expectation. So this is why I like to have these discussions, so that anybody listening knows, no, that's not true. We want to talk about them. We want to say their name. And so the more people hear that or understand that, hopefully they won't be as, you know, as shy or, you know, whatever you want to call about asking. So having gone through the experience, I know for myself, I'll say if somebody's spouse died, you know, I know to ask them, tell me about him. What was your favorite memory? What was your favorite meal that you shared together? Anything that you can think of before my husband died? I never would have done that. I never, because I didn't know.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And now you know.
Yeah,
so anybody listening, it's like, don't, please let us talk about them. That's a misconception that we don't want to talk about them.
No.
That's good. That's what people need to know.
You're right.
So, And so when you were going through all the COVID and the quarantining and whatnot, wasn't there like a two year span where you couldn't have a service for him or?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
We chose as a family to not have a service until we could all be together and feel safe being together. Granted, we still asked that only vaccinated people attend. Mm-hmm. That was our choice as a family to make. But yeah, it wasn't until the 2-year mark that we felt comfortable enough to do that. One thing that we did do, it was, I think, don't quote me on this, June 6th. I want to say it was like June 6th. It was before. So Carl's birthday was June 13th. He shares that with our daughter, Nikki. And, but we knew we wanted to do something for us, but also something for all of Carl's friends and colleagues throughout the world to kind of have some sort of celebration of him and remembrance of him. And so we came up with, he was a big video game player, worked at a video game company. Our son did his internship at the same video game company while our daughter was working at their big competitor.
Amazing. How fun.
And I was the only one that had signed an NDA for both. So, you know, sitting around at dinner was like, how was work? Good.
But yeah.
You know, they didn't like say anything to each other about really what they were working on and stuff.
That's pretty funny.
But so we came up with in Carl's honor, a 24-hour game-a-thon. And it's COVID still. And so, you know, everybody has gotten pretty good at Zoom and, you know, Twitch for video games and stuff. And so we did, and we put it up on Facebook, and we had it be, if you would like to make a donation towards COVID research, that was our goal. And it was just super fun. We put it out on Facebook and, you know, play any kind of game you want with your family or a card game, a board game, video games. I was by myself here. And so I walked up to the street above me with chalk and drew hopscotch. And then said, play along for Carl, because my neighbors all had heard, by this point. And so I'll play along for Carl. And then I could see out my window, like neighbors would be out because everybody was walking like crazy, early COVID. And they would come across it and they would do the hopscotch and stuff.
How fun.
You know,
I'm curious if you would have done that, do you think? If you waited 2 years, if you hadn't had that space in between, do you think you would have done a similar event for him or not? Because I find that fascinating. I think it sounds like so much fun, and not that it's a fun thing to be, necessarily. We're not celebrating death, but we're just remembering or honoring. Do you think you would have had that closer to his death if you were allowed to have a service and there wasn't so much social distancing at the time?
I think we probably wouldn't have even had it.
Right. Okay.
If it was normal circumstances and we could have had a service, you know, within 2 weeks or whatever, a month of his passing, we would have just had a service.
Yeah.
And not even felt the need to do this other thing. But the fun part about it was, you know, colleagues around the world we're playing games and then posting on the Facebook. Here's pictures of me and my family playing whatever, and they're in Sweden or
Amazing.
It was pretty cool. It was really fun.
That sounds fun.
My kids, you know, my daughter is who ran it all online, hosted the site, and I sent in video. My son sent video because we had like a little start of it service, whatever, where the videos were played. And then we did the 24 hours of gaming. And then my daughter ended it at the end of the 24 hours with a slideshow and stuff of Carl. So
wow.
That was cool. And we talk about, do we want to do that as an annual thing. We didn't
Which
end
sounds
up
amazing.
Doing it annually, but yeah. But yeah, so that would be a fun way to, you know, remember him and
yeah.
his just love of games. So
well, he's smiling. He's Might smiling happen. Down on you. Yeah. What when you're doing
oh,
all that
sure.
together.
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds like so much fun. Yeah. So, you know, looking mm-hmm. back, you're going through COVID and it's social distancing and there's not a lot of support options
yeah.
available to you. What support did you find helpful? Was there anything around you locally or you have family? They were able
I, yes,
to come
I
over.
Have a lot, yeah. Yes. I have a lot of family. In particular, I have my finance advisor is a friend. Our kids went to preschool together.
Okay.
And that's how I know him. And he was just amazing. Supportive as
Good.
Far as, okay, here's what we got to do. Let's get on a phone call. Here's the next,
yeah.
you know, set of papers you have to try to figure out. And, you know, like, but even banks weren't open. And
right.
I had to go, I think, for here in California, I had to drive 40 minutes to get to an open Wells Fargo.
Wow.
To try to even figure out, you know, what to do with the bank account and stuff.
Right.
It was, yeah. So yeah, Craig was very supportive. And just, you know, the friends that you don't expect
mm-hmm.
are often the ones that really show up.
It's so crazy how that happens. It happens almost all the time. It's like not the exception,
yeah.
it's the rule. The people that we think are going to
yeah.
be there for us aren't. And the ones that you would never expect mm-hmm. are the ones who step up. And it's so crazy how many times we hear stories like that. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But it's true.
I think we talked about that on one of the Widow Squad Zooms.
Yes, I'm sure we have.
The surprising
many times.
Number
yeah.
of us who had the pleasant surprise of, wow. And then that person showed up.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh. yeah. And the nice part about that is since experiencing that when somebody I know has lost somebody, I want to be that person.
Absolutely.
I want to
pay it forward.
I want to show
Absolutely.
Up for the people in my life. Yeah. Yeah.
Like
you were saying about, you know, asking about them, tell me about
mm-hmm.
your,
yeah.
you know, yeah. So those are probably two very positive things that have come out of it for me.
And
I'm less scared of asking
yes.
about the person and I'm more vulnerable in just showing up and wanting to be there for, you know, my other friends. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious if that segues into, yeah. you know, what have you learned the most about yourself in this experience? Like, how do you think you've changed positively or negatively? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not, you know, we are who we are and negative doesn't necessarily mean bad.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, different ways that we cope and stuff. But what do you think, what are some of the changes you've noticed about yourself since Carl died?
Oh, I think it probably reinforced for me who I already was, but mm-hmm. didn't give myself credit for.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
You know, like I didn't realize how scheduled or structured of a person I was
mm-hmm.
because it's just what I did. That's who I was.
Mm-hmm.
I did this and I'm a stay-at-home mom and I'm good
yep.
at it. And this is how I run things. And, but that, I don't think I gave myself enough credit for how good I am at that. And
yeah.
That was super beneficial in going through all of the, you know, finances and paperwork and everything that you have to do when you lose
yeah,
your spouse.
That's a great point.
You know, it's insane. And to be able to, you know, like that same Frank Craig, my finance advisor, we would be on a phone call with the tax accountant and the trust lawyer. And so I would be on a phone call with, you know, multiple people. And some paper, some email, some thread would have to be found. And
mm-hmm.
I was on it. And yeah. Craig, you know, we would hang up with everybody else and Craig would say, I knew you were going to find that. I knew you knew right where it was. And I was like, but I, yeah. So I think for me, it's giving myself the pat on the back, you know, that good job.
That.
And I do know a lot of things.
Yes, you do.
And I just didn't always give myself credit for it.
Well, I think that's just a trait of females in general. We tend to dismiss our strengths for whatever reason, if that's, you know, nature versus nurture, whatever, but we do that a lot. So we do talk about that in the Widow Squad a lot too, is giving yourselves that pat on the back and recognizing your strengths and how strong you really are. But going back to what you said earlier about when people say, you know, you're so strong, I don't know how you do it. And we've often said, but we didn't know how we did it either. Like you just have to deal with what comes your way. There's no strong or weak about it. It's just handling the things that are coming at you. So when people say you're so strong, it's almost, I find this, it could just be me, but I find it like minimizes my pain or my struggle. I'm not struggling because you think I'm strong. I don't feel pain because you think I'm strong. I still feel pain and I still struggle, right? No matter how strong you think people are. Yeah. But it's just that, it's that response that kind of gets under your, oh, it's just like nails on a chalkboard sometimes. Like I'm still suffering too. So don't dismiss that. You know what I mean? So.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I guess, you know, I always tend to respond with, I am strong, but I think I just went into survival mode.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of just go into survival mode and you do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one day at a time, one task at a time, and you just get through it.
Yes, you handle it.
It's not a club any of us want to be in.
Well, no. But, heck no. Not even close. So what, you know, we always ask like, what advice would you give a newer widow? Because now you can look back and see things you did or said, or, you know, how you acted or how people acted around you. And with some space between that, I have a lot of advice. I'm 10 years out. So I have a lot of advice I can give new widows, but what would you say, what would be something that, you know, some advice that you would give someone who's recently widowed, as a, like a, you know, a guiding light, like a little bit of hope.
I think I would want to say definitely give yourself the time you need to get the task done that has to get done, say today, and then allow yourself some grace to step away from it for the rest of the day. And just do another one tomorrow and do another one the next day. It doesn't, yes, there are certain things that have to happen in a certain time frame. But maybe, you know, allow yourself some grace and just take it one task at a time.
That's an excellent piece of advice.
And believe in your choices and decisions.
Mm-hmm.
I know I tend to go out and ask.
Oh, yes.
I'll be like all of my family's advice on before I do something, before I do whatever, right? And I think my boyfriend James has said to me a number of times, people aren't thinking about you as much as you think they are.
You got that right. He's a smart man.
Just do what's right for you.
Yes, exactly. That's it. At the end of the day, take everything else out of the equation.
And it's so hard for me. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it is.
Because I'm a people pleaser. Yeah.
Well, of course. And you want a little bit of reassurance. You want that little bit of reassurance that what you're doing or, you know, the decisions you're making are okay. But a lot of times people don't know what your situation is or what you're going through. So they may be giving advice that has nothing to do with what you're trying to get done. And I noticed a couple of times for myself, I would ask, because I'm the same way, I would ask all these people, like, I just wanted to know the decisions I was making were going to be okay. Well, 9 times out of 10, I would get different responses from people, or just flat out wrong. So after a while, and I'm talking years, but after a while you go, you know what? Yeah. I knew better from the beginning. Anyway, it was, I made the right decisions, even though I second guessed myself.
Yeah.
So that's a good point.
Yes.
You know, to your point, like you are capable of making decisions. It's scary as hell, but you're capable of doing it.
Yes. Yeah. And I think for me and it being a sudden death, I have only experienced, you know, like a longer illness type death with my mother-in-law where we knew it was coming. But with this sudden, I think I would be curious to know if there's anybody out there that doesn't second guess their decisions after that. You know, because you're like, I didn't expect this ever to happen. So I'm not sure that I'm on steady ground about anything right now.
Right. Right. Nobody's on steady ground after a death, whether it's sudden or whether, you know, like in my case, I had, I knew it was coming. I still second guessed every decision I made anyway, just because your whole world is turned upside down. Like everything is. Everything has changed. So how can you trust anything anymore? How can you trust anything when your spouse dies?
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon to second guess. We just know from experience now, having the hindsight, that it's not necessary all the time for every decision. And so, you know, to your point about what advice would you give new widows, just trust your gut, because it doesn't usually steer you wrong, right? Like that's just because everybody's different and everybody has different needs and you know, whatever. So we can't always give the right advice to somebody else anyway. We don't know the whole situation. No. So that's a good point. I want to ask you about your boyfriend.
Yeah.
I want to ask you about your boyfriend too. So James.
Yeah. Yes.
And how long have you guys been dating?
It will be 3 years in July. So two and a half years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how did, so he's obviously a good dude. You wouldn't be with him. How has he accepted you, right? How has he accepted this, your widowhood and talking about Carl and keeping him alive in your memory?
He actually is and has been amazing the entire time. Like has never pushed me or even asked me to, you know, put away any photos or take down anything or, you know, why are you doing that? Why are you keeping that? Just amazing. And we're in the process right now of packing up to move, right? And so I am sorting through, like there's four drawers here in my kitchen that are kind of like my desk. And one of the drawers was Carl's, my late husband's. And I just cleaned it out 2 days ago, that drawer, and hadn't even really looked in it much since he died. And I call them grief grenades. Like you never know when it's going to hit. And it was, I was sitting here at the kitchen table going through, and here were cards that I had given Carl or he had given me, and they were in there. And James saw me start to, you know, tear up and cry. And he just walked over with Kleenex and he goes, here you go. And how can I help you? You know, and it's difficult because these are emotional items that, these are emotional items that only I can go through.
Right. Exactly.
There isn't really any way that he can help other than he's very reassuring about, well, do you want to keep that or what do you want to do? You know? So yeah, he's been amazing. I am going to, in the new house, which he's living here now with me in the house that Carl and I lived in. And even if I wasn't dating, I decided in September last year that I am ready to be out of this house.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some great memories here, but the memory of walking into the bedroom where he died is always there.
Yeah.
And just on James' behalf, as far as how did he help or deal with this, when he was going to be moving in, he said, how would you feel if I found somebody who would like your bedroom furniture? First off, do you like my bedroom furniture? And I said, yes, I do.
Yeah.
He's very good at decorating. And so he said, how would you feel if I found somebody who could use your bedroom furniture? And would you allow me to move my furniture in to what will be our bedroom and redecorate it to try to take away some of that memory of Carl dying in here every time you walk in? And I'm all, yes, please. Yes.
Yes.
Don't, you know, that's who James is. Yeah.
Just, that sounds amazing. And that's a good thing for our listeners to hear too, because there are good guys out there. I mean, I got remarried and I didn't go through the whole dating, you know, online dating scene or anything like that. We met through a friend, but there are good guys out there. So wherever you, you know, wherever anybody is in their preference to date or not ever date again, it's fine. But there are plenty of nice guys available.
If you know where to look. I wasn't looking.
Yeah.
He wasn't looking. We've known each other since high school, but hadn't seen each other in 40 years, but we're friends on Facebook over the last few years. So you just never know. You never know.
You never know. And I think that when you're,
interesting.
But when you're not looking, isn't that what they say? Like it happens when you least expect it, right? When you're not actively
looking. That is what they say.
So that might be a good point of reference for our listeners too, that just kind of go do something else. Just kind of, you know, get involved
in
something else.
I literally had a conversation with my mom on the right around the 1 year anniversary of Carl's passing. And she slammed her hand on the table and she goes, so I think it's time you start dating.
Everyone,
I'm like, I'm all, you first, mom. Like,
yeah, right.
But I was like, no, I am not ready. No, it's not. We're in a pandemic. Like, I don't even know what dating would look like, mom.
Right.
And then it was, you know, 4 months later, here's James. Like, okay.
Yeah. That's amazing how that happens. I'm very, very happy for you. And I'm so thankful that you've come on today to tell us your story. We've known each other for a while. I think you're one of the OG Widow Squad members, one of the first to sign up back in.
I hope so.
Back in 2022. Yeah. So I'm just very impressed with your outlook and just the way you handle yourself. It's, you know, very graceful and kind, and you've added a lot to our Widow Squad membership meetings too. When you show up on the Zooms, so I'm very happy to have you on today and tell us a little bit about your story. And so thankful to hear that you found a house that you want to move into and you found a nice partner and that things are going well. Does not mean we don't miss our spouses. Does not mean we're not still sad. Does not mean any of that.
Right.
But you're moving forward and you're carrying Carl with you in your memory. And I really appreciate you telling us your story and coming on today.
Thank you.
I've had so much fun talking to you.
I'm so happy to share. Yeah. It was great.
Thank you. And we'll talk to you again soon, okay? And that's a wrap on our deep dive conversation into Tracy's journey with all its ups and downs. It's conversations like these that remind us we're not alone in our struggles, and there's always a light at the end of the tunnel, even when it's hard to find sometimes. If Tracy's story touched you, or if you've got your own experiences to share, remember, this is what the Widow Squad community is all about, supporting each other, sharing our stories, and finding strength together. Don't hesitate to reach out, join the conversation, or just get involved.
One more thing, if you could take a quick moment to drop us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast fix, we would be so thankful. Your feedback doesn't just help us reach more folks who could really use our conversations, but it also gives us the scoop on what's clicking with you. We want to make sure we're hitting the mark for our community. And if you know someone who could benefit from today's episode or other episodes of the Widow Squad podcast, please share it with them. Thanks so much for tuning in. See you next time. Until then, keep your spirits up and keep taking good care of yourselves.
Hey, it's Melissa. If you've been searching for a place to connect with like-minded widows, to build friendships, grow your confidence for doing hard things, and inspire healing after loss, we invite you to join the Widow Squad community at widowsquad.com. This special widow membership is made up of widows just like you, learning how to move through grief in healthy, self-affirming ways to create a life to thrive in. And we're doing it together. Go to widowsquad.com to learn more.